I'm Mark Vinette, and this is The Story of America. In this episode, we examine the relationship between a king of England and his realm's first great maritime explorer. Join me as the English sail west and compete to stake claim to a continent. European exploration outside the Mediterranean Sea started in the early 1400s and followed many currents that eventually led, before the century's end, across the Atlantic Ocean to North American shores. The age of exploration led to the rise of global trade and colonial empires, instigating contact between the Old World continents of Europe, Asia, and Africa with North America. These interactions produced the exchange and transfer of a wide variety of plants, animals, food, human populations, culture, and communicable diseases between the Eastern and Western hemispheres. The age of exploration allowed the mapping of the planet, resulting in a new world view and distant civilizations coming into contact. The era also saw the military conquest and economic dominance of foreign lands, as well as the spread of European civilization and its advanced technology. As a wider variety of global luxury commodities entered the European markets by sea, previous European networks for luxury goods stagnated. The Atlantic trade largely supplanted pre-existing Italian and German trading powers, which had relied on their Baltic, Russian, and Islamic trade links. The European economic center thus shifted from the Mediterranean to Western Europe. Between the 11th and 15th centuries, the European economy was transformed by the interconnecting of river and sea trade routes, causing Europe to become one of the world's most prosperous trading networks. The Norman conquest of England in 1066 allowed for peaceful trade on the North Sea. A confederation of merchant guilds and their towns in northern Germany along the North Sea and Baltic Sea was instrumental in commercial development of the region. When the Lancastrian Henry Tudor took the crown of England from the Yorkist King Richard III at the Battle of Bosworth Field in 1485, he brought an end to the Wars of the Roses between the House of Lancaster, which used the badge of a red rose, and the House of York, which used a white rose. To properly appreciate the Tudors, one must understand that Henry VII won his kingdom at the point of a sword and picked up his newly won crown from the mud of a battlefield. Henry was born in 1457 in Wales. His father was Edmund Tudor from the House of Richmond, and his mother was Margaret Beaufort from the House of Lancaster. In 1470, he was given the title of Earl of Richmond by Henry VI, last of the Lancastrian kings. Early in 1486, the newly crowned king married Elizabeth of York to bring all factions together and reign as Henry VII. Henceforth, using a unified red and white rose as his family insignia, the Tudor Rose. He wanted this badge to represent him, his family, and his heirs as an important symbol that would enhance his legitimacy as king and propagate his legacy. King Henry VII of England was considered by many a usurper of the crown, causing him to constantly defend, promote, and solidify his tenuous claim to the crown. His son was the infamous Henry VIII, and his grandchildren were the monarchs Edward VI, Queen Mary, and Gloriana, the Virgin Queen, Elizabeth I. Henry negotiated marriage alliances for his children as part of his diplomacy. The 1503 marriage of his daughter Margaret to King James IV of Scotland aimed at detaching James from his alliance with France and ultimately led to a union of English and Scottish governments. Prince Arthur's marriage to the Spanish Princess Catherine of Aragon was ended by Arthur's subsequent death from a respiratory infection. Monarchs Ferdinand and Isabella suggested Henry's younger son and namesake as a replacement husband for their daughter. Henry VIII and Catherine would reign together for 24 years, until the king, in search for a legitimate male heir, replaced the queen with a new wife, Anne Boleyn. During his 24-year reign, Henry VII's policy of restoring governmental effectiveness and implementing a more generous enforcement of law and order earned him much support. Government income more than doubled as he showed great sense and frugality in the use of money. The structure of Henry's government remained medieval in organization, But the king's investments in commerce, attention to technological changes in shipbuilding and mining, and sponsorship of voyages to the new lands across the ocean all gave to the general impression of Henry's government an effect which was both modern and national. The news of Christopher Columbus's recent discoveries on behalf of Spain was a spur to English action and secured the support of King Henry, who gambled on his own venture of exploration. On March 5, 1496, the king issued letters patent to navigator Giovanni Caboto, better known to history as John Cabot, and his three sons, giving them his royal authority for a voyage of exploration. The royal document authorized them, and I quote, "free authority, faculty, and power to sail all parts, regions, and coasts of the eastern, western, and northern sea, under our banners, flags, and ensigns, with five ships or vessels of whatsoever burden and quality they may be, and with so many and with such mariners and men as they may wish to take with them in the said ships, at their own proper cost and charges, to find, discover, and investigate whatsoever islands, countries, regions, or provinces of heathens and infidels in whatsoever part of the world placed, which before this time were unknown to all Christians. We have also granted to them and to any one of them, and have given license to set up our aforesaid banners and ensigns in any town, city, castle, island, or mainland whatsoever, newly found by them. And that the before mentioned John and his sons or their heirs and deputies may conquer, occupy, and possess whatsoever such towns, castles, cities, and islands by them, thus discovered, that they may be able to conquer, occupy, and possess, as our vassals and governors, lieutenants, and deputies therein, acquiring for us the dominion, title, and jurisdiction of the same towns, castles, cities, islands, and mainlands discovered."
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-218-6010. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-218-6010. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-218-6010.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
We follow John Cabot on his legendary voyage of exploration across the Atlantic Ocean to the coast of North America. Sailing for God, gold, and glory, this titan of history has entered the pantheon of humans who changed the course of world history. His voyages had profound global consequences and quickly led to the opening up of the continent to massive changes and European colonization. We sail alongside John Cabot and share in the exploits of England's first great maritime explorer with the support of the English King, Henry VII. We explore the northeastern coast of North America under the flag of England. The English King, Henry VII, issued letters patent to John Cabot, or Giovanni Caboto, an Italian-born navigator, authorizing him and his three sons to voyage in search of unknown lands, to return their merchandise by the port of Bristol, and to enjoy a monopoly of any trade they might establish there. Technological advancements that were important to the age of exploration were the adoption of the magnetic compass and advances in ship design. Ships grew in size, required smaller crews, and were able to sail longer distances without stopping. This led to significant lower long-distance shipping costs. Prior to the age of exploration, European sailing had been primarily close to land, guided by port and coastal nautical charts. These sea atlases specified proven ocean routes guided by coastal landmarks as sailors departed from a known point, followed a compass heading, and tried to identify their location by its landmarks. For the first oceanic exploration, Western Europeans used the compass, as well as progressive new advances in cartography and astronomy. Arab navigational tools like the astrolabe and quadrant were used for celestial navigation, using astronomical charts plotting the location of the stars over a distinct period of time. These tables revolutionized navigation, allowing the calculation of latitude. Exact longitude, however, remained elusive, and mariners struggled to determine it for centuries. The exact details of John Cabot's life and his voyages are still subjects of controversy among historians and cartographers. Described as another Genoese like Christopher Columbus, Cabot was born at the midpoint of the 15th century and spent his formative years in Venice, eventually engaging in Mediterranean navigation and trade. There he married and had multiple sons. In 1488, he moved to Spain and sought support for an Atlantic expedition, before moving to London in 1495 to seek funding and political support for a voyage to find an alternative route to the Orient. His plan was to depart westward from a northerly latitude where the longitudes are much closer together, and where, as a result, the voyage would be much shorter. The king agreed, and like other explorers at those times, Cabot led an expedition on commission, in this case, from England. John Cabot went to Bristol to arrange preparations for his voyage. Bristol was the second largest seaport in England and was the only English city to have had a history of undertaking exploratory expeditions into the Atlantic. In 1496, Cabot made a voyage west from Bristol, but was forced to turn back because of a shortage of food, inclement weather, and disputes with his crew. In May 1497, Cabot sailed again from Bristol on a little ship called the Matthew, in the hope of finding a route to Asia. Leaving Bristol, the expedition sailed past Ireland and across the Atlantic Ocean. On June 24th, he sighted land somewhere on the coast of North America and called it New Found Land. He believed it was Asia and claimed it for England. Although the crew, upon making landfall, did not meet any native people during their brief visit, they did apparently come across tools, nets, and the remains of a fire. The crew appeared to have remained on land just long enough to take on fresh water. They also unfurled both the English and Venetian flags, claiming the land for the King of England and recognizing the religious authority of the Roman Catholic Church. Cabot continued to explore the coast for weeks thereafter, making observations and charting the coastline for future voyages. He landed only once during the expedition, before turning back. The exact location of the landfall has long been disputed, with different communities vying for the honor. Records indicate that he sighted land at a northern location believed to be somewhere in the Canadian Atlantic provinces. For the 500th anniversary celebrations, the governments of Canada and the United Kingdom designated Cape Bonavista in Newfoundland as the official landing place. Here in 1997, Queen Elizabeth II, along with members of the Italian and Canadian governments, greeted the replica, Matthew of Bristol, following the ship's celebratory crossing of the Atlantic. John Cabot has historically been credited with being the first European to land in North America since the Norsemen, and thereby also recognized as being the first European known to have landed in Canada after the Viking Age. On return to Bristol in early August 1497, Cabot rode to London to report to the king that the new lands were excellent, the climate temperate, and the sea covered with enough fish to satisfy England's needs. He was given a reward, adulated, and feted as a great explorer. 9 months later, Cabot departed on another expedition with a fleet of 5 ships from Bristol. Some of the ships carried merchandise, suggesting that he intended to engage in trade on this expedition. One of the ships was caught in a storm and forced to land in Ireland, but Cabot and the other 4 vessels continued on. Mystery surrounds the fate of the expedition. Was the fleet lost at sea? Or did one or more ships return safely to port? It's not known if Cabot survived the voyage, or returned and died shortly after. His overall efforts, however, helped lay the groundwork for the later British claim to Canada. King Henry continued to support exploration from Bristol. In 1508, one of John Cabot's sons, Sebastian, undertook a voyage from Bristol to North America, where he explored a section of the Canadian and American coast from Hudson Bay to Chesapeake Bay. Following his return to England in 1509, Sebastian found that his sponsor, Henry VII, had died, and that his son, the new king, Henry VIII, had little interest in westward exploration. Like Columbus, Cabot believed that he was laying claim to part of Asia. The New World, which had begun as a dream, ended up being mistaken for another continent. It seems apt, however, that Canada, which has become a nation of many cultures, should have been discovered by an Italian sailor who was building on the navigational experience of Portugal and Spain, whose voyage was funded by the King of England, and who mistook this continent for Asia, the land from which the native people's ancestors had come. We continue to rule the waves during the fascinating age of exploration. Sebastiano Caboto, better known to the English-speaking world as Sebastian Cabot, was the son of celebrated Venetian explorer John Cabot. After his father's death, Sebastian conducted his own voyages of discovery, including seeking the Northwest Passage through North America for England. He is most appreciated by historians today, however, for his world map of AD 1544, also known as the Sebastian Cabot Map. Heather Tesco of the Renaissance English History Podcast has graciously agreed to share with us her take on the significance of the renowned Sebastian Cabot Map.
Let's talk about the Age of Exploration in the context of a map of the world by Sebastian Cabot. The original of this map is still to this day in the French National Library. And the map is actually a map of the world that Sebastian Cabot created when he was still living in Spain. Sebastian Cabot, of course, was the son of John Cabot. The Cabot family had ties both in Spain and in Bristol in England. They were the earliest explorers in England whom Henry VII even had commissioned to explore the Newfoundland area. The map itself was something that Sebastian Cabot had created to show not just where he had explored and his father had explored, but also the lands that were claimed by different countries, by England, and that he had claimed and that his father had claimed. So in addition to the map, there's a lot of notations around the corner. The writing is so super small, and you can see all around the sides. You need a magnifying glass to be able to read all of these notations explaining the different voyages that were taken and what land was claimed and by whom. So that's kind of the story on why he created the map. But the map became famous in England, and it would go on to inspire a generation of explorers. And it became popular thanks to an engraving created by Clement Adams. The short version on Clement Adams is that he was born in 1519. He was a writer and an engraver and a school tutor who happened to tutor some of the leading noblemen in England, the friends of Edward VI. He was educated at Cambridge, he worked for William Cecil, and he wrote about voyages that were happening at sea. It's thanks to him that we know so much about the early voyages of the ships who tried to find the Northeast Passage. Adams was born in Buckington, Warwickshire, about 1519, as I said. He was educated at Eton, and then he went to King's College, Cambridge. He was elected a fellow in 1539. He got a BA in 1540 and an MA in 1544. And then, 8 years later, he became the schoolmaster to the king's henchmen. And then he died in 1586 and was buried at Greenwich. And those are like the facts that we know about Clement Adams. But the earliest mention of Adams in the literature of the 16th century is by his contemporary Richard Eden. Richard Eden is actually known as the father of English geography. Eden was a contemporary of Adams, like I said. He translated works of travel writers and explorers into English, which helped to further the interest in exploration in the mid-16th century. And for this work, he received a salary of £20 a year. So in the mid-1550s, Eden translated the first part of Decades of the New World, which was a series of letters and reports of the earliest explorations of Central and South America. This series of letters was first published in 1511 and then later anthologized. Eden translated the first three decades and published them in 1555, and thus began the genre of English discovery travel writing, which stimulated English exploration in the New World. So Richard Eden was England's first travel writer. Richard Eden started to get people excited about all of the potential of the Americas when he published this translated first part of Decades of the New World. His translations were reprinted with supplementary materials in 1577 under a new title, The History of Travel into the West and East Indies. So back to Cabot and his map. He made this map, recording the discoveries of himself and his father, John Cabot, along the coast of Newfoundland in 1497. That was a trip that they took, and there's actually been a lot of argument and debate amongst geographers and historians about what they actually discovered, but that was the point of why Cabot made the map. Supposedly, there was a French map already in existence that was used as a base for this 1544 map, and Cabot's contributions to it were confined largely to notes on his own and his father's voyages, and to his opinions and his views and ideas about the navigation. There are a total of 4 known editions of the map. The first one is this one that appeared in the journal Science in 1883. This is in the French National Library, was created in 1544 and found at a curate's house in Bavaria in 1843. Then there was a map seen at Oxford by Nicholas Heschoff in 1666. That one was drawn supposedly in 1549. Then there was the map engraved by Clement Adams. And then there was a final one that supposedly was in the private gallery of the King of England that had the date of 1549, but disappeared somewhere in the mid-17th century. And one thing about Cabot is that it's clear that by this point, he was behind other cartographers. For example, he still has Newfoundland as a vast archipelago, and Cape Breton is a mainland. And there's actually French maps issued before this that are more accurate. So we can't take this Cabot map to be the truth of geography or even what leading cartographers at that point thought. Cabot was behind what the general intellectual consensus of the time period was. But it's interesting to see because this was more personal for him. This was him wanting to write down what his father had found, what he had found. And it was like almost a diary. So when Cabot came back to England, the new version of the map was created by Clement Adams. This was in 1549, and Cabot added some things to it. He particularly added a claim about one of his voyages he did, a northern voyage where he reached a channel between 61 degrees and 64 degrees north, which extended westwards for 10 degrees of longitude. This actually was excellent publicity for his view since the map was bought and displayed by merchants and courtiers. Although no copy has survived, but it was very popular. A lot of merchants bought it, a lot of noblemen bought it and had it displayed in their homes. So Clement Adams did this engraving and a lot of people bought copies of it and it became very, very popular. There are several mentions throughout the literature of the mid-16th century of people talking about these engravings being in leading merchants' homes. A lot of merchants who were potentially trying to think about whether or not they were going to invest in a voyage or if they were investing and they wanted to show off just how much they knew about the New World, they would have a copy of this map in their shops to show people, look, I'm with the time, I'm totally right up there, and I know what's going on, and check out just how forward-thinking I am. So the contemporary of Cabot's map, discovered in Germany, the one I mentioned from the 19th century journal Science, is in the French National Library in Paris. The original is now lost. That was in a volume published first in 1594. Adams says that there's a legend relating to the discoveries of the Cabots to be found upon it, described by him as an extract taken out of the map by Sebastian Cabot concerning Cabot's discovery of the West Indies, which is to be seen in Her Majesty's Privy Gallery at Westminster and in many other ancient merchants' houses. No copy of the map engraved by Adams is now known to exist. Sebastian Cabot had been saying for a long time that it was possible to reach the Indies not by heading northwest, but also by heading northeast above Russia and then coming down the side of Russia. This was something that Cabot had been believing for a long time and had been pushing. It took a good 15, 20 years of pushing by him and getting people involved and having people believe in him. Also, it was important that the Spanish and the Portuguese at that point had sort of had the monopoly on the trading routes and on the shipping routes. And so England wanted to find something new, something that nobody else had. And heading north and east seemed like an appropriate thing since they were already pretty far north anyway. When talking about Sebastian Cabot, Adams tells how certain grave citizens of London and men of great wisdom and careful of the good of their country began first of all to deal and consult diligently with him, Sebastian Cabot, who is described as a man in those days very renowned. His growing reputation is also shown. The imperial ambassador wrote a letter talking about him on the 4th of September, 1553. He said, "The people of London set a great value on the captain's services and believe him to be possessed of secrets concerning English navigation." And then in 1594, another version of the Cabot map shows up, and that was edited by a German traveler, and he was in England in 1565. He was there to pick up antique and curious legends and monumental inscriptions that he could find for his book while he was at Oxford. He saw a document with some geographical tables, which had some inscriptions in Latin, but he says that he copied and printed in his volume, filling 22 pages of the book. They are totally in Latin, and they correspond substantially with the Latin inscriptions on the sides of the Cabot map in Paris, though there were fewer notes and inscriptions than in the Paris map itself. And so I wanted to share this cool story of this map and of the people who were circling around this map and circling around each other and leading in part to building this age of exploration that would come 30 years later, leading eventually 70, 80 years later to the colonies in America. But that early on, there was this map and these engravings of this map, which were shown in merchants' houses to show just how with the times they were. And I just think it's kind of cool that there was this schoolmaster who was teaching Edward VI's henchmen, and he engraved this map, and that it would go on to make such a difference to the age of encounter, the age of exploration. I just think it's a cool story. So that is a little bit about Clement Adams. That's a little bit about how he circled around with all of these people. And then with Eden and his decades and being the father of English geography. I just think it's a really cool story how this map kind of ties everybody together. And everybody was circling around this map and these various editions that then were even found in the 19th century and became news and became popular all over again.
I'm Mark Vinette, and I hope you're enjoying the story. Doctors endorse it, nutritionists recommend it, and customers love it. Calotrin Healthy Weight Loss. Ron in Texas lost 35 pounds. Marie in Pennsylvania lost 117 pounds with Calotrin. Diane not only lost weight, but she also found relief from arthritis. Lynn lost over 45 pounds. Calotrin contains collagen, the most abundant protein naturally occurring in the human body, which decreases as we age. Taking Calotrin promotes better sleep, more energy, less joint pain, and best of all, weight loss. Calotrin has an amazing 86% success rate with their 90-day supply. And this week, take advantage of their President's Day sale. Buy the 90-day supply and get an extra month free, plus free shipping. Ordering is so easy. Just text the word HISTORY to the code 30605, and we'll send you a link to this special offer. Again, text HISTORY, that's HISTORY, using the code 30605.